This is Fresh Air. Good news for James Crumley fans. He has a new novel, his first in 10 years. It brings back his private eye, C.W. Chagrue, who first appeared in the novel, The Last Good Kiss. Crumley's other two detective novels, The Wrong Case and Dancing Bear, feature the private eye, Milo Dragovich. The Village Voice has called Crumley a first-rate American writer. Harper said what Raymond Chandler did for the Los Angeles of the 30s, James Crumley does for the roadside West of today. Crumley was born in South Texas and now lives in Montana, where much of his fiction is set. Crumley's new novel is called The Mexican Tree Duck. I ask the question that's on the minds of most of his readers, why has it been so long between novels?
Well, I was working in Hollywood writing unproduced screenplays and paying some bills. And I guess I just sort of hadn't found a book that I wanted to work on, nor a book that paid as much money to work on as it did working on screenplays. Quite frankly, my books didn't make any money for a long time. I still haven't made a lot of money. And I needed a break. I'm not quite sure. But I was working all through that time. I never found the right material.
What kind of unproduced screenplays had you been writing?
Almost everything. I adapted one of my novels, Dancing Bear, with a director named Tim Hunter.
What happened with that?
Nothing. It's just the script sitting in Warner's vaults.
It must be a very frustrating occupation to write things that end up sitting on somebody's shelf.
Well, it's when I was a younger man, it might have made me, and when I'd done less teaching and when I'd, gone through less years being broke, it might have made me angry. But as it is, it's just part of the job. It's part of the deal. When you go to Hollywood, you accept the fact that you're working for somebody else, unless you're writing strictly originals and directing them yourself. And it is disappointing to get to the end of a job and find you don't have anything at the end but a check. But I don't have any real complaints. I enjoy working in Hollywood and plan to continue.
Your fiction has had two main characters. Some novels have Milo Dragovich mm-hmm. as the main character. And your new novel has your character of C.W. Chagrue. Why did you choose Chagrue for the new novel as opposed to Milo?
Well, so I got to using the Chagrue voice because United Artists owned the Milo Dragovich character at one time.
Oh, you had sold the movie rights to him?
Yes. And so my agent suggested I just change the name, and when I changed the name, I picked up a character out of an unfinished novel, and he had the right kind of history to be a private eye. So I used him, and it changed the novel. And so pretty much now, what I do is I write 100 pages without really knowing whose novel it's going to be, and so I let the material tell me which detective to use.
Do you feel closer to either of the two characters? Do you feel like either of them is more like you?
I think Milo's maybe a better version of me. He's a kinder and a more he's the voice that somehow helped me learn how to handle the world, and then the Chagrue voice is the voice that helped me learn how to handle Hollywood.
Why did Chagrue help you with Hollywood?
Well, he's got no backup in him, and he don't give up, and he don't. He's just a little bit meaner and a little bit less willing to get along.
Well, tell us what brought Chagrue to Montana, and what brought you to Montana.
Well, I came here to teach freshman comp in 1966 when I finished my MFA at the University of Iowa, and it took leaving once to realize that I'd found a home. I grew up in Texas and never felt very much at home there. And then Chagrue came here on a case chasing a guy and ended up staying when the guy killed himself. This is in the opening of the novel, actually. the guy hung himself in the bathroom of a bar, and his wife sick so many lawyers and lawsuits on Chigrou that he finally moved to Montana to get away from it all. And he too found a home in a different kind of way than I did, but a home nonetheless.
Well, he runs a bar.
Well, the private eye business has not been good for him lately. He doesn't do the kind of work that's really lucrative, the industrial stuff and the security stuff. He mostly has one talent, and that's finding people. And so he's now, either he said somewhere or I said somewhere that it seems that either people stopped running away or other people stopped looking for them. And so he's now managing a bar on the outskirts of Meriwether, Montana.
There's a paragraph about bars. Would you read that for us?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
This is from the beginning of The Mexican Tree Duck by James Crumley.
Bars can be nice places, comfortable, homes away from the loneliness or confusion of homes. But nobody, not even the most confirmed, degenerate drunk, can spend 80 or 90 hours a week in one. I went through so much help, I actually hired a woman so drunk she had forgotten that I'd fired her the week before. I don't know what my excuse was. Something to do with my nose, I suspect. As far as I was concerned, sunshine was something that happened in another country. I didn't care if it came out, but then it did, just to prove me wrong.
Have you spent a lot of time in bars?
I've spent a considerable portion of my life in bars.
Do you like bars?
I've always been... I've been the sort of person that's always had a local, as the Brits say, and I'm always, when I'm driving someplace, I tend to stop in bars and find out where I'm going and talk to people. I've done that not just in the States, but also in England and Scotland and France and Mexico and the Philippines. It's as if bars are places where people let their guards down and they're willing to be engaged in a sort of way. They're not willing to be at home or on the sidewalk or in business situations.
When you talk about people letting their guards down in bars, are you talking about other people or yourself too?
Well, I don't know about myself. For years, I wouldn't tell anybody in a bar that I was a writer. I would tell them that that the telephone company had run over my foot, and I'd gotten a big settlement, and I was living off of that. And it was a wonderful way to begin a conversation because, you know, everybody's had trouble with the telephone company in one way or another, and they're always happy to see somebody that's engaged them in one. And so they'd start that, and then you'd get the stories without having to have them turn to you to say, well, you're a writer, huh? Boy, you could make a novel out of my life, which is the worst way to begin a story.
Right. And then you just get a rambling version of the person's life, huh?
Well, you just get the stories in bursts.
If you're just joining us, my guest is James Crumley. He has a new detective novel called The Mexican Tree Duck. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Writer James Crumley is with us. There's a moment in your new novel, The Mexican Tree Duck, in which the main character is thinking back to an incident that really changed his life. He had gone to the National Gallery, and seeing the paintings there led him to stop being as violent. I'm wondering where that incident in the book comes from, if that connects to anything in your life.
Well, that may be the only autobiographical thing I've ever written about. That I wasn't down there playing football. I was just down on a weekend pass and from Fort Devens in Massachusetts. And I'd probably never seen a painting that wasn't on velvet by that time. And so that was a really important moment in my life. I don't know exactly what, and it wasn't about being less violent because I was never as violent as Chigrou. That was never one of my major difficulties with life, but it did something to me. The kind of thing that it still does. Like, I can go to Paris and stand in the Van Gogh room at the Musée d'Orsay, and it transcends something inside you. There is something about looking at those paintings that just brings a thrill to your heart. You know, Jesus, it's just wonderful.
Since you didn't grow up around art, were you shocked to find the impact it could have on you?
Shocked is not quite the right word. I was just literally amazed. I mean, I wouldn't leave. Everybody else wanted to go out drinking and chasing girls, and I wouldn't leave. And finally, I left when they closed. And I had the say-so because I had the car keys. And I just never seen anything like that. If I'd have been a more sophisticated reader, I would have known that something like that was possible, but I wasn't prepared for it. And even though I'm prepared for it now, it's still a shock. But it's okay. It's a good shock.
Your character Shugru says, maybe that was my life, helping those who could still care, even if I couldn't. Does that condition, that condition of not caring, apply to you at all?
I don't think so. I can remember a period in my life where things were so troubled that it felt as if I had run out of emotions. That I was just, that I was incapable of the kind of feeling that I just couldn't stand it anymore. I think that's a fairly common thing. People just shut down their emotions because they can't deal with them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly not been true for a long time. I have 5 children and 5 grandchildren and a new wife and a new house and a wonderful old cat and lots of good friends and lots of political attitudes and there's many things that I care about. I can still cry at movies.
Well, I think of myself as a person who's kind of emotionally involved with things myself, and yet I really relate to lines like that. Maybe mm-hmm. that was my life, helping those who could still care, even if I couldn't. What is it that is appealing about reading about that condition of not caring, even if you're very kind of emotionally entangled things yourself in things yourself?
Geez, I'm not. I don't know. A couple of reviewers have picked on that exact line and called it self. What do they call that word?
Self-dramatizing.
Self-indulgent. Self-pitying. And looking at it in retrospect and in the cold heart of a radio studio, maybe there is a certain amount of self-pity. Maybe it's in the fact that you can't always have raging emotions. It's hard to keep that emotional level up all the time, perhaps. But then the idea that even if you can't keep it up for yourself, you can keep it up for other people is gives you a nice sense of martyrdom or something. I don't know. I just thought it was a nice moment. And I mean, Shugru's obviously all the way through this book, he has reached that state where he's not sure anymore. He's lost something, and he's trying to get it back. And I hope in some ways he does get it back by the end. I won't talk about the ending because
it's the ending.
It's the ending, right?
Okay. Well, one last question. Are you writing any screenplays that you're certain will go unproduced?
I'm adapting Dancing Bear for Robert Towne now.
Mm-hmm.
And this looks like the closest I've ever gotten to anything.
It must be something to adapt it for him because he... I mean, he's not only a director and screenwriter, but he was known as like the script doctor in Hollywood. If you needed a screenplay that needed fixing, he was one of the guys you take it to.
Yes, he still is, and he's a genius, and it's been a great deal of fun to work for him, and I thought it was wonderful that he thought that I should write this script instead of him, and maybe between the two of us, we'll have a movie sometime next year.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
It sure would.
Well, I hope so. Well, thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I sure appreciate it.
James Crumley's new novel is called The Mexican Tree Duck. This is Fresh Air.